I'll call the meeting to order, even though people don't, haven't all arrived yet, but all the really star legislators are here already, so we will start. And we have coffee and cookies in the back, which is today everybody can eat in this room, including the people in the comfortable chairs in the audience there. So help yourself, and same with committee members as well. And just to let you know, the cookies are from the Cookie Factory, which is operated by students in North High School. And there were a lot of North High School students here this morning from the Ed Policy Committee, for those of us who serve on that. And they make them and deliver them, and they're very reasonably priced. So if anybody wants to help out those students, see the finance staff here, and they can let you know how to order them. They actually missed sending us 24 of the cookies that we ordered, and before we hardly missed them, they had driven over and brought us those 24 and did not charge us for those, even though we tried to insist upon paying. So highly recommend them. Before we get started, we have two new staff people for this session, and they are our pages. So we always ask the pages to come up and sit in the testimony chairs, whether they want to or not, and so they can tell us a little bit about themselves, and we can ask questions if we want to. So who would like to go first?
I will.
Margot, okay.
I'm Margot Beeging. I graduated from St. Ben's with a degree in communication and political science. And this is my first real job. So, well, even if you can call it that. So, yeah.
Wonderful. Well, welcome to our committee. I think you will enjoy working with us, and we'll enjoy working with you.
Thanks. Okay, I'm Danielle Smith, and I just graduated in December from the U of M with a degree in political science, global studies, and Spanish. And this is also my first job after graduation, so I'm excited to be here.
So welcome, and Liz tells me already that they're very good workers. So any questions from the members for our new pages? Representative Benson, were you raising your hand or just eating your cookie?
Eating my cookie.
Okay. You're luckier than some of the testifiers that come here. So welcome, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Garofalo, maybe you do have a question.
No, Madam Chair, I should have tipped you off in advance of the meeting. It's kind of an annual tradition that you and I, like the first meeting of the year, I remember, I think it was two years ago, I gave you a apple as my favorite teacher on the first day of committee, and then when we were on Almanac together, I gave you a Pat Garofalo for state representative t-shirt, and I got you a t-shirt this year, but I have not received it yet, so I thought I could just describe for you what the t-shirt says. I know you'll like it.
Okay.
What it says is, "Don't blame me, I voted for Hillary." That's the t-shirt that I'm getting you for your gift. I should have cleared it for you. I thought it was funnier than apparently the rest of the committee did.
Yeah.
So, but with that, just wanted to wish you a good year. I know we got some difficult choices to make, but as always, I look forward to working with you.
Thank you, and likewise. It's always very good to work with our lead Republican, Representative Garofalo. And I'll look forward to the t-shirt, even though I was not a Hillary supporter, by the way, because she voted for the war, and candidate Obama did not. But look how that turned out, you know. Okay, then we have our minutes to approve, and the first one is from January 6th. May I have a motion to approve the January 6th minutes?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the motion.
Representative Benson moves the minutes of January 6th. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for January 6th are approved. Now we have the minutes for January 27th. Representative Brown.
So moved.
Representative Brown moves the minutes of January 27th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes of January 27th are approved. Just one little reminder before we start with our report from the legislative auditor, and that is to remind members that any bills that you had last year need to have a hearing request if you want them to be reactivated this year. Otherwise, they will stay in the last year and never be heard from again. So if you are interested in any of your bills, you have to renew it, your interest, with a hearing request. Okay. And then we will go straight to Judy Randall from the Office of the Legislative Auditor with the report on alternative education programs. And we may not have a lot of good news every time we meet in this committee this session, but this one we thought we would start with because there is good news. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall, and I'm with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. Pleased to be here today to talk with you about our evaluation on alternative education programs. Before I get started, I would like to acknowledge my colleague, Sarah Roberts, you did right there, and thank her for all her good work on the evaluation. Let me give you a quick overview of where we're headed today. First, what are alternative education programs? We're going to talk in detail about what they are. I can tell you now they are not charter schools, they're not magnet schools, they're not online learning providers. They are a different type of school choice option. They are public school programs that help students who are struggling in the traditional schools. And I'll talk more about what those programs look like and the students who enroll in them. But first, let me tell you a little bit more about where we're headed. As Representative Breiling said, we found some good news. And as auditors, we don't get to say a lot of good things. So we were excited this time around to get to say we found some good news. We found some alternative education programs with really encouraging student achievement results. So that's where we're headed, and we'll talk more about that. Unfortunately, the Department of Education has restricted which school districts can provide these programs, those programs for which we found the encouraging results. Not all school districts can provide those. So that's where we're headed. Let me back up a little bit, give you a little more detail on the schools and the students, and then we'll get to the exciting findings. So first, alternative education programs are provided by three different types of organizations: area learning centers, ALCs, alternative learning programs, ALPs, and contract alternatives. ALCs, by law, must serve more than one district if they're not in Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Duluth, and they must have middle and high school programming. They have to have a comprehensive program so that a student who attends an ALC could ultimately earn a diploma through that program. ALPs can serve just the one district. They can serve more than one district, but they are only required to serve students in their district. And ALPs can determine which grades they serve. So they can serve middle and high school students with a comprehensive program, or they could do something more limited, something like a school within a school, and pull out students for a class or two. And then finally, contract alternatives are non-public organizations that contract with the school district to serve students who are struggling. And currently, only Minneapolis and St. Paul use contract alternative programs. We divided the kind of world of alternative education programs into two buckets, if you will: regular day programs and extended time programs. And these are terms I'll be using throughout the presentation, and they're used throughout the report as well. Regular day programs are a substitute for a traditional school. A student goes to a regular day program as part of their regular day, hence the name. Students served in this program are in grades kindergarten through 12th grade, although most of them are in high school. Students can attend a regular day program full-time or part-time, and it's typically located in a separate site. Regular day programs are funded through general education dollars. So, you know, if a student attended St. Louis Park High School, the gen ed dollars would follow the student there. If instead the student attended a regular day alternative education program, most of those gen ed dollars would instead follow the student to the alternative education program. In contrast to the regular day programs, the extended time programs are supplemental programs. They also serve students in grades kindergarten through 12th grade, but rather than being during the regular day, they take place before or after school, during the summer, on the weekends. They supplement the regular day programs. They're often at traditional schools, although not necessarily, and they're funded through extended time revenue. So again, you've got regular day programs and extended time programs. Students may attend one or both of these types of alternative education programs. We spend a bit of time in the report and in the presentation talking about extended time programs, so I'm going to give you a little more background, which I think will help you understand the recommendations and findings. There's two big categories of extended time programs: targeted services and credit recovery programs. Targeted services are those supplemental programs, but they're only for students in grades kindergarten through eighth grade. Tend to be remedial programs, help students learn how to learn. They can take lots of different forms. They just need to be provided by a licensed teacher. You see there in the red, it says ALCs only. That's something we'll be talking more about. But for now, let me just say that only school districts that have an approved ALC are permitted to provide targeted services. Credit recovery programs are those extended time programs for high school students. This is where students can make up a failed credit. They tend to be course specific. And all three types of organizations, the ALCs, the ALPs, and the contract alternatives, can provide credit recovery programs. So that's a quick overview on the types of alternative education programs that are out there and who provides them. Let me move now to talking about the students. By law, students must meet one of 12 eligibility criteria to attend an alternative education program. I've listed a couple up here. All 12 are listed in 124D.68. Most students are eligible because they are behind academically, but the list of criteria range from if a student's pregnant or a parent, if they're chemically dependent, if they've had mental health problems, if they're homeless, basically a list of criteria that identify additional challenges that place a student at risk. All students in alternative education programs, whether they're in a regular day program or an extended time program, must meet one of those 12 eligibility criteria. We looked to see where students were enrolled in alternative education programs in 2009. And here you see on the green, almost 150,000 students were enrolled in some type of alternative education program in 2009. The yellow and red bars below are subsets of that green bar. So of the 150,000 students, more than 112,000 were enrolled only in an extended time program, so only in a supplemental program. The red bar shows that not quite 27,000 students were enrolled in a regular day alternative education program for at least 30 days. And we set that 30-day minimum to try and capture students who were enrolled in an alternative education program for some meaningful amount of time. When we parse that out further, you can see that more than 86,000 students were enrolled only in targeted services. And so as a result, because of the large number of students in that program, we focused quite a bit on targeted services. You can see about 24,000 were in credit recovery. And then if you look at the regular day students, less than 4,000 students were actually full-time in a regular day alternative education program in 2009. We also looked at student demographics in 2009, and we think not surprisingly, given the eligibility criteria to participate in the programs, alternative education students are different than traditional students. Alternative education students are more likely to be non-white. They're more likely to be eligible for free or reduced price lunch, and they're more likely to be mobile. In 2009, 40% of alt-ed students attended more than one school. That's compared with 4% of traditional students. So again, 40% of alt-ed students moved schools at least once compared with 4%. So it's a very different population with lots of different challenges. So that's an overview of students and the programs. Last spring, the Legislative Audit Commission asked us to look at alternative education student performance. They asked us to look at how are these students performing and how is performance best measured. And that was kind of, you know, the big question of the evaluation, it seemed. So we did lots of research. We spoke to lots of different stakeholders. We looked at lots of different data. And we reviewed the literature. And really, there's consensus that you should use multiple measures when evaluating alternative education student performance. So we identified five different measures that we wanted to use, and they're listed up there. The first was proficiency on the MCA2, Minnesota Standardized Assessment Test, or Standardized Assessment. We use this measure not because we necessarily think proficiency is the best measure for these students, but it's certainly a standard that exists out there in the state and one that's important to look at. We also looked at growth on two standardized assessments, the MCA2 and the MAP test, the Measures of Academic Progress that's administered by the Northwest Evaluation Association. For this, we looked at students' growth between 2008 and 2009. We contracted with the Northwest Evaluation Association to get the MAP test data for all alternative education students in 2008 and 2009, and we're able to get over 20,000, data on over 20,000 students. And I should just point out, as I'm sure you all know, the MCA2 is required by the state. The MAP test, although not required by the state, is widely used across the state and by a large number of districts. We didn't want to rely just on standardized assessments, so we also looked at attendance rates, graduation rates, and student satisfaction. And to gauge student satisfaction, we surveyed all alternative education high school students who are enrolled in an alt-ed program at least half-time. We did an online survey through the schools and heard back from almost 3,000 alternative education students. So it was really interesting to hear their feedback and their information about their experiences. So let me run through each of these measures quickly. The first one was proficiency, and I think not surprisingly, alt-ed students had significantly lower rates of proficiency than traditional students. Again, I say not surprisingly because one of the main criteria that allows students to attend alternative education programs is that they are behind academically. So the fact that they had lower proficiency rates, you know, we kind of expected that. We looked at the proficiency rates by targeted service at the targeted services students and then also at those regular day students. So again, those targeted services students are those K through 8th grade students who are just in the supplemental programs. We found that the proficiency rate, the gap between their proficiency rate and that of traditional students was smaller for students in targeted services than it was for the regular day students. Again, I don't think that's particularly surprising, but the data bore out what we kind of expected. Now to the good news, looking at growth on assessments. So we again looked at them in two parts, the targeted services students and the regular day students. So when we looked at those K through 8 extended time students, we found that these students showed significantly more growth on both the MAP test and the MCA2 test when compared with other students. And when I say significantly, I mean, you know, it's very meaningful number. So let me show you the three comparison groups that we used. For the MAP test, we compared the growth shown by targeted services students to the growth as reflected in national norms. We also looked at the growth when compared to a matched comparison group. So each alternative education student was matched up with 51 students with some similar demographics, some similar characteristics, and then the growth of those two groups were compared. And then on the MCA2, we looked at the growth displayed by other Minnesota students. So just to give you some context, so on the reading test, on the national norms, against the national norms comparison group, the targeted services students showed 20% more growth on the MAP test than the national norm group showed. So it's a big difference in growth rates. The green check marks indicate that it was a significant difference in growth. Again, green showing good that they had more growth. The yellow dash on the reading MAP test, the targeted services students didn't have a significantly different growth rate than the comparison group. Again, they grew, but just pretty much at the same rate as the comparison group. So we think this is very encouraging. We were pretty excited about it. Again, we don't get to say a lot of good things, so it was nice for us to get to do it. The problem is that the Department of Education has limited which school districts can provide targeted services. Under the current policy, the department only allows school districts with approved ALCs to provide targeted services. We think the link between ALCs and targeted services is tenuous. The programs take place at different locations. It's typically different teachers, typically different students, and typically different curriculum. So given the fact that the link between ALCs and targeted services is weak, and given the growth results we found on the standardized assessments, our recommendation to the legislature is that you explicitly allow all school districts to offer targeted services, regardless of whether they provide other alternative education programs. These students would still need to meet the eligibility criteria, but we think that it should be available to all students who meet those eligibility criteria, regardless of where they live. Let me move now to talking about growth on the assessments for the regular day students. Again, these are mostly the high school students. And here the results were not as encouraging. We found that these students fell further behind on all three benchmarks. But when we looked at this, we thought, well, we're not sure if these are the right benchmarks for these students. We don't know how these students would have performed had they not attended an alternative education program. Some of them, you know, would have kind of struggled through a high school and graduated, and some of them would have dropped out. We visited 12 programs across the state, and at two of them, we met with groups of students. And, you know, I don't know that I'll ever forget, I sat across the table from a young man who was about to graduate, and he very matter-of-factly said to me, you know, if I wasn't here, I would be on the corner dealing drugs, and I wouldn't care. You know, and now I'm about to graduate, and I've got plans for my future, and I'm about to go embark on them. So, you know, is growth on a standardized assessment or proficiency on a standardized assessment the best way to capture the growth by that student or other students in similar situations? You know, we're not sure. And so that's why we looked at multiple measures and didn't just rely on standardized tests. So let me move now to looking at attendance. The first thing we found when we looked at attendance rates, which I don't think will surprise any of you, is that for all students, the older they get, the less they attend school. So sixth graders attend school a lot more than 12th graders. So we made some adjustments for that in our analysis, and then we took students who were full-time in an alternative education program in 2009, and then looked at those students' attendance rates in 09 and 08, and looked to see if they had better if their attendance had changed at all between those 2 years. And we found that for 40% of the students, the full-time students in alternative education in 09, 40% of them had improved attendance rates in 09 when compared to 08, and a quarter of them had similar attendance rates as in the previous year. We also looked at graduation rates for these students, and what we did for graduation is we identified all students who were in the 12th grade in the 05-06 school year. And then we looked to see how many graduated by the end of 06, by the end of 07, 08, and 09. So we gave them 3 additional years to graduate. You can see here on the bar chart, the yellow are traditional students, students not enrolled in alternative ed, and the red are the students enrolled full-time in alternative ed. In 2006, so the first year we looked at, 89% of traditional students graduated, compared with 39% of alternative education students. But if we gave those same students 3 additional years, by 2009, 62% of those alternative education students had graduated. So what we take away from the data and also from the conversations we had with, you know, directors and teachers and students is that, you know, they might not get there right away, get there meaning, you know, graduate and get their diploma, but a large majority of them are getting there eventually. They're just on a different timeline. It's taking them a little bit longer. The last performance measure we looked at was student satisfaction. And again, we did a survey of high school students who attended an alternative education program at least half-time. So these are those regular day students. We heard back from almost 3,000 of them. And perhaps not surprisingly, we found that they're generally satisfied with their alternative education. Now, of course, alternative education is a school choice option, so they've chosen to be there. So I guess it's reassuring that they're satisfied with it. Students reported that their academic performance was better, their attendance was better, and their behavior was better now that they were in an alternative education program. 70% or more of them said that their school was preparing them for the future, their teachers cared about them, and they were getting what they had wanted and expected out of their program. So those were the 5 measures of performance. We also looked at oversight of alternative education programs. The Department of Education approves alternative education programs, but provides pretty limited ongoing oversight. And that ongoing oversight really falls to the school district within which the program operates. This seems to work relatively well, although there are some concerns about curriculum in some programs. And I'm just going to focus on that just a little bit more. We heard some instances where a student, say, was 2 math credits short of graduating. That student left their resident district and attended an alternative education program in another district. 3 weeks later, they came back and said, okay, here are my 2 math credits, I'm ready to graduate. So the resident district kind of, you know, balked a little and contacted the Department of Education and said, do I need to accept these credits and, you know, what's going on here, basically? And the department's response was, yeah, you need to accept the credits, and we don't really have the authority or the capacity to review the curriculum of those other alternative education programs. So that leads us to our second legislative recommendation, which is to allow the Department of Education and school districts with students enrolled in alternative education programs outside the district to be able to review and challenge the validity of the curriculum and make sure that it meets state standards. When a student attends an alt-ed program within the same district, of course, the district controls that curriculum and can make adjustments to it. This is when a student attends an alternative education program outside of the district. In the report, we provide some specific language. There's already this ability for online learning providers. The Department of Education and a resident district have the ability to review and challenge the curriculum for online learning providers. And we recommend that that same language be in place and extended to alternative education programs. In the report, so these are the 2 big legislative recommendations. There's a recap here. So allow all school districts to provide targeted services, regardless of whether they provide other alt-ed programs. And then secondly, this one about curriculum, allowing the department and the districts with students enrolled outside of the district to review and challenge the curriculum. In the report, we make some recommendations to the Department of Education, and I'll run through them quickly here. The first is that the department should initiate a pilot project to look at using additional measures to measure student performance. We don't recommend that this be in place of the MCA2s or standardized tests, but we think that this should be in addition. It would help legislators perhaps get better information about how these programs are performing and how these students are performing. And it would also help the programs look at different ways to identify what seems to be working. So perhaps using some of the measures we used in our report, like attendance or graduation, but perhaps other non-traditional measures, things like measures of hope or self-esteem or GED attainment, or, you know, just thinking kind of more outside of the box. We also recommend that the department increase its ongoing oversight of alternative education programs. And then finally, we think the department should review its policies for determining whether alternative education schools make adequate yearly progress. And this is, it gets kind of technical really fast, but real quickly, an 11th grade student takes the math MCA2. Well, perhaps they are attending an alternative education program to make up an English lit class. Okay, so they're attending the alt-ed program all year to make up some English classes they failed. Well, that 11th grader takes the math MCA2 test. That student's math MCA2 score is credited both to their regular school and also to the alternative education program that year has only taught them English. So we think that the alternative education program should be held accountable for what they're teaching, but not for what they're not teaching. And we can get into that more. That's a real quick snapshot of that recommendation. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll conclude the presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that excellent summary and the excellent report. Questions, members? Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question about your second recommendation, the one having to do with districts being able to challenge the curriculum. How would that work in practicality as far as challenging? Challenge to whom, and who would adjudicate the disagreement?
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, thank you for the question. It would parallel how it's working currently for online learning curriculum reviews, and I'm hopeful the department can speak a little bit more to the actual mechanics of it. But right now, if a school district were to challenge it, they would take it to the Department of Education and say, Department, I want you to look at this, you know, at XYZ alternative education programs curriculum. You know, my student got 2 math credits in 3 weeks. Is that reasonable? And there may be instances where that is reasonable. You know, I mean, people talk to us about it. It sounds maybe not possible, but perhaps a student, you know, had mastery of the material but didn't finish a project and so didn't get the credit. So there may be places where it's reasonable, but so to have the department be able to have the authority to then follow up on those claims and look at it. So it would rest with the department ultimately.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, and we will have, next we're going to have the department, and then after that, Steve Allen, who's the president of the Alternative Schools Organization. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Garofalo.
I'm talking to Representative Garofalo when I call on you.
Do we have assigned seats in this committee, Madam Chair?
Thank you, Representative Dabney. It's my fault.
Madam Chair, Ms. Randall, I did need some. This is an ignorant question. The kind of magic wand problem that you just described of somebody goes away for 3 weeks, comes back, and poof, they've got credits that they didn't have. I've also heard my school district report the same concern with charter schools, where with some charter schools, by no means all, the kid goes away and all of a sudden, with no demonstration that their English is actually any better, they've now got several credits in English. And so a couple of questions. One, does the school district have the ability to challenge that curriculum or those credits from a charter school rather than an alternative school? And secondly, there are some charter schools that market themselves as essentially alternative schools that talk very articulately about the student body that they are attracting, that they are working to serve, and that they are hopefully productive with. How do you differentiate then between an alternative school and serving that population and a charter school that's serving what may functionally be the same population.
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, I think both excellent questions. The first regarding, does a school district have to accept the credits from a charter school? My understanding is yes, that school districts have to accept the credits that were awarded from other school districts, whether it's out of state, a regular school district, or I don't mean to say regular and that charter schools aren't, but a traditional school district and a charter school. You know, this wasn't a charter school evaluation, so we didn't make a recommendation paralleling those, that language, the online learning language, to charter schools. You know, ultimately, curriculum is kind of the jurisdiction of the local school board, and so I think there's some tension perhaps between the state being able to review everything and the local school board. You know, it comes down to a policy decision for you all. So I think I'll stop my answer on that one before I dig a bigger hole. Regarding your second question, about how to distinguish between charter school and alternative school, I think it's a fair point. I think in many cases they look very similar. That being said, alternative education schools must be approved by the department, and students who attend them must meet eligibility criteria, and students who attend them must have in place a continual learning plan, CLP, which, while not an IEP, is in my mind, at least, that's how I think of it. You know, it's a plan in place for each student, talking about what they need to do to progress and ultimately graduate if they're in high school. So there are some actual there's some specific requirements for alternative education programs that charter schools don't have to meet. I'm trying to think. You know, there are some things that charter schools aren't required, some requirements that charter schools don't have. I'm thinking of the administrator licensure stuff. And I believe, you know, alternative education programs would have to meet those requirements. But I think that there are cases where they look very similar. And certainly, you know, in Minneapolis in particular, I can think of a number of charter schools that are specifically targeting at-risk students intentionally and wanting to work with them. And, you know, I think Minnesota has a whole range of school choice options, and, you know, there's kind of a lot of room there for everybody to play.
I have one question, and then it looks like Representative Biskins. Under the legislative recommendations, it says the legislature should allow all school districts to offer targeted services regardless of whether they provide other alternative education programs. And then I'm reading on page 61 under targeted services. It says that the Department of Education allows only ALCs to provide targeted services and not ALPs. And this policy contradicts the law, which explicitly states that ALPs may serve students of one or more districts, may designate which grades are served, and may make program hours and a calendar optional. So when, what did the legislature do? Insist that our law be passed, or do you think we need some additional, be followed, or do you think that we need additional statutory language, or we just need to do a better job of making the law be followed by the department? Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, I think it's an excellent question. We make the recommendation to the legislature, and we talked about it internally, saying, well, we're telling them to pass a law which, you know, it's already allowed, but it's not allowed by policy. So it's allowed by law, not by policy. And we ultimately decided to make the recommendation to the legislature to explicitly allow targeted services in every district because the department has imposed these restrictions. So we think it's important to just make it very direct and explicit in law.
Thank you. Well, there's a bill for somebody this year. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Randall, on slide 21, I'm interested in your second recommendation that MDE should increase its ongoing oversight of alternative education programs. And I'm wondering if you and your staff had a discussion about this and why you chose MDE as having increased oversight rather than the school district and the school board itself having that responsibility.
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Biskins. The reason why we said that we thought the department needed to provide more oversight is because right now the department approves programs. So it has a process in place for approval But once a school district has been approved for an ALC or an ALP, the department doesn't look back at them. You know, unless there's a big complaint, the department isn't revisiting those programs. So there are some school districts that may want to provide an alternative education program, and they're held to a set of standards, but a program that's been in place perhaps for 10 years may no longer be meeting those standards. We don't know, but it's possible. So it's a matter of kind of keeping everybody up to the same standards. In the report, we outline a couple of different ways we think the department could approach this. You know, one would be doing regular site visits. One would be doing beefed up desk audits. One that I'm a little partial to, frankly, is implementing some type of peer review process. The department does this type of thing for QCOMP. So you have, you know, folks in other alternative education programs going around and making sure they're all meeting a set of department standards, but then also being able to share ideas and best practices through doing that. So it wouldn't necessarily have to be the department with a heavy hand with oversight. But again, since they have these approval process standards in place, we think it makes sense to maintain those on an ongoing basis.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Ms. Randall, taking it to the extreme then, would it probably be best that we accredit alternative programs?
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins. Yeah, that's a policy decision. We don't go that far.
Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins, there's a bill for you, right? Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you please give me a definition for targeted services and then some examples?
Sure. Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, targeted services are extended time programs, the supplemental extra programs for students in kindergarten through eighth grade. It can be before and after school, it can be a weekend, it can be summer. It won't look the same in any two places. There's kind of three basic criteria. Needs to be provided by a licensed teacher, needs to be for a student who meets one of the eligibility criteria, and it's extended time. That's it. So that can look like a lot of different things. It could be students after school in a smaller group with a teacher doing something really amazing and innovative, some project-based learning thing that gets them excited and incorporates all sorts of different things. It could be something a lot less exciting. It could be students after school or during the summer going over some math. But the main criteria are licensed teacher, extra time, and eligible student.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so who right now cannot offer targeted services?
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, I have a handout that has a map. The map is not in the report because it can be misleading because school districts work together and we don't know all of the relationships among the school districts. But the map will show you, it's from the department's website, and it shows where all the ALPs and the ALCs are located. Kind of talking slowly so you can all get the map before I go too far. So on the map, there will be, you'll see kind of areas where there's no dots, so they're not going to be near any ALC, and then you'll see areas where there's just dark dots, and those are ALPs. So north central Minnesota, north of Grand Rapids, doesn't have any alternative education programs approved. Very northeast corner of the state and the southwest corner of the state are the areas that currently do not have approved ALCs and therefore may not provide targeted services. Now, that's not to say that those school districts didn't get grant money or aren't using their other funding to provide supplemental programs, but they're not receiving extended time revenue for targeted services.
Thank you very much.
Okay, any other questions from members? Well, before we move on to the department, I just want to make a comment, members, that it's when we have this kind of result and it is good news, I also think it's not good news that this is one of the types of funding that suffered under the budget cuts in 2003. Because we used to have much better funding for alternative programs, for extended time, And it was a shame when we cut them, and they haven't, they've been delinked from the formula, cut, and basically frozen. But now that we have what we all seek after, and that is research and evidence that they actually work really well. 20% difference from the other group is like something we don't hear around this committee very often, that I hope that we can someday get to the new Minnesota miracle that puts extended time revenue back so it's linked to the formula and has the proper funding that it deserves. Because we talk about the achievement gap. We talk about making sure that all kids get a chance to catch up and do well and graduate ready for success. But when we are shorting this program, we're not walking the walk that we talk. So thank you. Any other questions? Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just as a thought, Madam Chair, and I don't remember specifically 03 and 04 I was here, it seems to me we delinked because I don't think we really cut. We delinked and maybe didn't increase. But is it possible, Madam Chair, that the increase in performance that we've seen is as a result of some reforms that were put in place as a result of that, and that we looked at what we had to do and actually became better? Sometimes, Madam Chair, just putting more money into something does not necessarily equate to quality. So I just as an alternative thought and maybe a little more clarification about that back then, just as we talk about these things.
Thank you, Representative Demmer, and that's a perfect segue because I want Mr. Crow to, because who will believe what I have to say? We have to have our fiscal staff tell us what exactly happened. And so I'm going to call on Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, in 2003, what actually happened was a reduction in the number of ADM that students generate as part of these extended time programs, and there was a new extended time revenue created at that time, and the net result was a reduction for the 2004-2005 biennium of about $25 million, and then for 2006-2007 it was about estimated at about $30 million of reduction in funding for extended time programs, going from a base of about $130 million to around $100 million over a two-year period. And prior to that, there had been a limit on the number of ADM in 2002. That limit was reduced further in 2003. And the new extended time revenue program was created in 2003.
So my conclusion then would be $30 million is quite a bit of a cut. And if we're going to be talking about Racino's and funding stadiums, I would say this research-based program that actually shows by our respected nonpartisan legislative auditor's office actually works for kids is a better bang for our buck. And it does employ people who have to do these teachings as well, so it is a jobs bill. We always have to make sure on this committee that with all this talk about jobs around here, that we make sure we translate what we're talking about into jobs as well, because anybody who works with our kids is surely working at a job. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just have one last question. Do you have any information as a cost per student for an ALC or an ALP versus a regular student?
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, the alternative education programs, the regular day programs, are funded through the general education dollar. So it's the same, well, it's not all of it, in fact. So it's slightly less in law. And Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow can certainly feel free to jump in and be more articulate on this than I. But the most of the general education dollars that would follow a student to St. Louis Park High School, for example, follows a student to their alternative education program. In law, 90% of the gen ed dollars need to go to the student's education in the alternative education program. The only time it's additional dollars is for the extended time program. So that's the targeted services and the credit recovery programs. And then that's up to a cap of 0.2 ADM. So it's kind of a circuitous answer, but I guess the main point is it's not necessarily a different amount than what's in a regular day program when you're looking at an ALC.
Thank you.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize I had to leave, but I have heard this presentation twice before, so.
You can jump right in. You're already fully informed, Representative McClark.
I'm just wondering if there's any correlation between people that are in the regular day program now, how many of them may have had targeted services? Or to put it another way, if people have the targeted services, will they end up in the alternative programs?
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, we don't have the data to answer that question. I think it would probably be safe to say that even if everybody had targeted services, there will still be students who need to attend an alternative education program. But perhaps the numbers would be, you know, reduced. But I can't say anything definitively.
All right. Representative Anderson. And then Biskins, Garofalo, and Depke. And then we will go on to the department. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a clarification, going back to slide 12, talking about the improvement shown by the students. Did I hear you correctly? Was that just a one-year comparison between 07 and 08? And if that's the case, is it accurate over a longer period of time, do you think?
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative, the information on slide 12 for the MAP test, it's the growth over one school year, so it's from fall 08 to spring 09. And for the MCA2, it's from spring 08 to spring 09. And, I mean, it's certainly accurate that growth was displayed over that year. In terms of, and our numbers were extraordinarily high. I mean, we had, you know, over 20,000 students in the targeted services. So, again, it's very meaningful at statistical level. Whether that rate of growth can be sustained over several years, we don't have the answer to that.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is Mr. Crow. Mr. Crow, when, and goes along with Representative Dietrich's question, when a student goes to an ALC in a regular day program, is that student's per pupil funding, particularly their compensatory revenue, recalculated based on the number of free and reduced lunch students in that ALC?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, it essentially depends on which school they're in October when the free and reduced lunch count is taken. If they're showing up as enrollment at a site, that's going to be the site where their free and reduced lunch count is going to be determined. So for an example, someone taking 0.2 times the day through an ALC but also attending the regular school, their full amount of compensatory will show up at the regular school where they're counted in that October count.
Okay.
So it's a little situational, but for most of the students listed, they're going to show up in a home district, in a home building, and that's the building where their compensatory is going to be counted at.
Madam Chair, thank you, Mr. Strom. So if I have this right, for those students that are in a regular day program as of 1st of October, they would be classified as being in that ALC, and then because as I read the demographics, most of the alternative learning students are eligible for free and reduced lunch, that would then indeed inflate the compensatory revenue. Then, if they're in, and I'm thinking of, say, an ALC, and my friends to my left, my new left, Representative Morgan Burnsville, who probably doesn't have high concentrations of poverty, and yet, if we bring all of these students together in a single facility, then they are going to bring in or generate a lot more per pupil revenue because of the concentration factor.
Mr. Schaub?
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, yes, it's going to depend on that site, and for a high school student, essentially in an ALC program full-time, if that ALC is counting on the October count, they'll be in that.
Thank you, Madam.
And, of course, that compensatory fix is in the new Minnesota Miracle as well, so I'm sure you'll be supporting that.
I'm sure
that.
You had thought about that.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom, I just, for the extended time revenue, I just want to, I think I know the answer to this, but I just want to make sure there's no minimum definition of a standard day before you can kick into extended time revenue. Or, for example, you got two students in two separate school districts. One goes to school for 7 hours, the other one they go to school for 5 hours, and they have extended time for 2 hours. even though it's the same amount of seat time. Is that, do I understand that right or not?
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, that's correct. There's no state standard. It's just dependent on what the site has set as the minimum day or the district has set as the standard day.
And the last one before we go to the department, Representative Depke.
Thank you, Chairwoman. I just wanted to get back just quickly to Representative Dietrich's question because I thought it was an excellent one when she asked you if there was a higher cost per pupil, and you had said that it comes from the per pupil formula for the state. But within the district P&L, and maybe Mr. Crow can correct me on this, but I think that when we have special education costs, we still report at, I think, a state level our average per pupil cost, then the cross-subsidy for special education shows up on the individual district P&L. So is it possible that when you're looking at it, the alternative student costs are on the individual district's P&L, and there still might be a cross-subsidy or a differential at that point?
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative Depke. Yes, I think the short answer is yes. When I was responding to Representative Dietrich, I was talking more about it from the revenue side. Mm-hmm. From the cost side, we were not able to calculate the cost per student mm-hmm. from the alternative programs, but certainly from the conversations we had with lots of people, I wouldn't be surprised, let's put it that way, if the districts are subsidizing the alternative education programs. And one of the main characteristics that program directors and students cited as different in their alternative education program from the regular programs was that the school was smaller or that class sizes were smaller. Mm-hmm. So if you have smaller class sizes, it tends to inflate the cost.
Thank you very much, and thank you.
Thank you. And thank you again to Ms. Randall and to Sarah Robert for the excellent report. And we have also honored with Jim Noble, our legislative auditor, being here as well. So thank you all. And now we will hear from the department. We have Assistant Commissioner Karen Klinzing and also Glory Kibble for the School Improvement Supervisor. So welcome. And I don't, Ms. Klinzing, Commissioner Klinzing, are you going first?
Yes, I will. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, as was mentioned a few times today, it's always good to see that increased investments and programs really do reap benefits. As you could see from the OLA report on pages 18 and 19, we have been able to increase the revenue for targeted services by 58% since 2001. And we're not always sure when making those increases that we're increasing those expenditures in the right places. And with targeted expenditures, targeted services, certainly this report's cleaning that out, at least for the past year of growth for our K-8 students. We do want to respond to some of the recommendations so that you can understand the department's position or situation with respect to the recommendations, and some questions that you can consider going forward as you take some of these under consideration. It sounds like some of you are already writing some bills.
the beginning of session, so you know how that goes.
So the first one, that the legislature should allow school districts to offer targeted services regardless of whether they provide other alternative education programs. With respect to that, when there's been a lot of question about why, what was the intent behind or the rationale behind this policy. And we have done a little digging, and we're not exactly sure the thinking behind it, but it does date back to the early 1990s. So it is a policy that's been in place. It's been common practice for almost 20 years, and it's not been one that we have had reason to question. And certainly the success of targeted services may put out there a question of whether more revenue streams that have these targeted elements as requirements might be a good thought. But I think it does come to more than just a policy or administrative question for the agency, because when you do consider this, as you can see in the OLA report, You probably will have a number of districts that will now have access to that funding that don't currently utilize it, and that will create a $12 to $30 million additional increase in the funding that will need to be there for those districts. So I think that's the question really before the legislative body, that we really wouldn't want to unilaterally change a 20-year-old policy and create that dilemma for the budget like that. So it is more than just that MDE decision. Additionally, when we do know at that time in the early 90s when this decision was made that it was expected that every single district would have a relationship with an ALC, and by virtue of that consortium relationship with an ALC would therefore have access to targeted services. So at that time it was believed that that model would work and every district would have that access. As it turns out, there are districts right now who do not have or have not formed a relationship, and Ms. Kibble can speak a little bit more too about why it's developed that way over the last few decades. The only other thing I'd say about that recommendation is going forward, maybe consider the elements of what's working in the targeted services revenue programs right now so that those elements then become part of all the other programs that would develop out there, all the key elements that have been mentioned today. The second recommendation that the Minnesota legislature should allow MDE in school districts with students enrolled in alternative education programs to challenge the validity of the curriculum provided by those programs. This is a recommendation that is not just coming up with respect to ALCs. We've actually heard, we've been approached multiple times in my tenure at the agency on the agency becoming kind of that arbiter between different school entities on this very issue with respect to PSEO, charter schools, other states' curriculums, one traditional district to another traditional district, because there are some districts who feel they have a superior academic program compared to other traditional districts. And so with this one, I would put before you, having been in your seat for a few years, that you consider the policy change of having the state become the curriculum arbiter or referee in all of these situations. It is true that in the last few years, this was a that the MDE was given authority to investigate curriculum concerns with online learning specifically, and it is very specific to online learning. So we are accurate when school districts call us with concerns about yoga PSEO programs or courses or credits being used to suffice for graduation, that we really don't have authority in a number of these questions about curriculum. That is something our state has traditionally left to the local school districts and school boards. We do have state standards, but we expect the school boards to enforce that those standards are met and that the requirements of their district satisfy the state standards. We do not have an enforcement mechanism in law for the state standards. So if you go down this road with giving, opening this up for ALCs, you're now talking about traditional, some ALC programs which are in traditional district having their credit and coursework challenged at the state, and the state becoming an arbiter in a number of curriculum questions. And that's really a big policy question that is, I think, duly put to the legislature to make that decision. In the case of online learning, we have had some reports we've already done with respect and investigations, and there have been concerns uncovered in at least one of those cases. But it is a very intensive process, and so if you do decide that you want the state to play this role, It is you would need to consider the state agency's capacity to be able to deliver on the number of concerns that would come in. We don't have a lot of content experts. In fact, we have one content expert in each field, and it does take them at least a day or two to go through one school's or one investigatory request. The other next recommendations, first, MDE should initiate a pilot project to use and evaluate additional measures of alternative education student performance. We do not disagree at the agency that there are a number of indicators that point to student success, but we also know that one that we can't put aside, as was stated by the Office of the Legislative Auditor, the measure that they're using for growth, which is the test of academic performance. So we would support looking at additional measures, but could not support setting aside, and I'm not saying that was suggested in this report, but I'm making it clear because there are some entities who do suggest setting aside state test scores as a measure. If we do consider additional measures, we want to consider additional measures in addition to that so that we can continue to get the federal funds that are attached, of course, to having that state summative assessment for academic achievement in math and reading. And there are a number of initiatives, not just with respect to alternative learning, but other college and career ready initiatives that are already identifying course taking credits as important, behavior referrals, attendance, etc. So we know that we take that one seriously under consideration and would argue it's kind of already underway. The MDE should, the next recommendation, the MDE should increase its ongoing oversight of alternative education programs. We can certainly consider some of the recommendations that were made within the capacity that we have of the current person. We have one staff member who is dedicated to alternative learning center and program oversight. And so within that one person, we can certainly consider some of the recommendations that have come forward in here. Beyond that, we would not have the capacity to do much more oversight than within that one person. And then MDE should review its policies for determining alternative education schools' adequate yearly progress. We do believe, with respect to counting a student's math class, if they're taking math at the traditional district and also at the ALC for credit recovery, we do think there is a good rationale for counting that twice because we're trying to measure the school's ability to deliver on that math program. And with that, we'll consider some of the other nuanced situations, such as the one that was presented here, going forward as we review these policies. At this time, just wanted to close by saying that we're happy to see, of course, the success with the targeted services. I am somewhat disappointed to see that the high school programs that are regular day programs are not seeing as much success. Having worked in an alternative learning program, not a center, but a program, I know that these students, for some of them, it is a last chance situation. But I would hope that we as a state continue to hold the expectations high for them going forward, because when they leave, there may not be an alternative learning center job available, and we want to make sure that they're as prepared as possible. So I think there's some more work to be done in ensuring that those programs that are those regular day high school experiences for kids, be it probably the best place for them, that we continue to try to make sure that they're getting the best that they can while they're there, and we're holding them to high expectations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Klinzing. Ms. Kibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I really don't have anything to add at this time other than any questions that you may have. I think that Assistant Commissioner Klensing did a good job of talking to the recommendations.
Could you identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. Lori Kibble, Education Supervisor at the Department of Education.
Okay. For either one of you, we think of the department, I know, has a diminished capacity, and it's been every year cut, 4% here, 4% there, and it's adding up, and then plus the tripling of the testing staff, that's all takes a hit when we're trying to look at other programs like this one. But when Ms. Randall was here, she was talking about not just oversight and punitive measures, but also facilitating things like peer review, like is done for QComp. And I just am a big fan of local people who know more than anybody, and then they can share their expertise and often like to if they have it. And then it's a helpful thing rather than, somebody coming down with a big gong. And so I wonder what you thought of that recommendation, either one of you. Commissioner Klensing.
Thank you. Chair Greiling, members of the committee. I agree. I mean, we've seen that be very successful. I think masters of their craft in alternative learning teaching are going to probably identify some really high-quality criteria to hold their peers accountable for and be excellent mentors to them through that kind of process. And that's really what I was referring to when I was saying that within the one person who exists at the agency, we are, I think, open to looking at some of those things that one person can do. And I think that facilitating that kind of process is one of those.
Excellent. Other questions, members? Thank you both very, very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen. Welcome, and please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Steve Allen. I'm President of Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify regarding the Legislative Auditor's Report on State-Approved Alternative Programs that you have received today. My testimony will cover two areas. Number one, I would like to talk about the process that the investigation was conducted. And number two, I'd like to talk about the recommendations and some concerns, primarily emphasizing the need for alternative assessments and pilot programs. First of all, the process. Whenever you get notified that you're under an audit, you worry and you start to get involved. And I just want you to know that in Minnesota, we should be pretty pleased with what we have with our Legislative Auditors Department. The report was carried out in an extremely professional manner. It was very inclusive and allowed our organization a tremendous amount of input and involvement. No, we didn't agree with everything in this report, but we were allowed significant input opportunities for expressing our disagreements that we may have had. For this, we're very appreciative. The recommendations. I'd like to add a comment on the extended time before I get into my report, because Minnesota Association of Alternative Program has had extended time revenue in a bill two or three different times over the past 6 years that it has been frozen. And we've lost out in the Joint Conference Committee two of those times. That's been real disappointing on our end. The first recommendation that all school districts offer targeted services. I was there when Jerry Hughes introduced the Learner Year Bill. So I didn't have to research this one. I was there. Okay? And the intent was, right back then, summer schools had been cut. Okay? And they had just been cut. And my concern on this is a little bit different twist. Yes, I think we should have that growth that you saw here extended. Although, the only thing that I echoed in my report is being careful that the safety nets and the ALCs who have overseen these programs and worked with their colleagues in mainstream to assure that the right kids are getting served at utilizing alternative methods of instruction. And I think that's really the critical piece, that there has to be some type of watchdog there to make sure that there's learning plans, so that every kid has an individualized learning plan, so that you can address those unique needs that the student may have. That's my only reservation in regards to that. The recommendation number two, should MD in school districts with students enrolled in alternative programs to challenge the validity of the curriculum. I take a little bit different position on this for, as you'll see. While we are not threatened by this recommendation, it is somewhat degrading to our professionals. The majority of our schools and programs are responsible to their local school districts for their curriculum guidelines and to the local school boards. In releasing of this report, one legislator criticized the curriculum that a student was receiving while in a chemical dependency program. This criticism told me that we have not done a very good job of educating our public or our legislators about the nature of at-risk students and the role of alternative education. At this stage, it's not just about curriculum. It's about building relationships and trust. Failure is hard to overcome. There has to be a transformation process. Research states that for every year of academic and or personal dysfunction, it takes a minimum of 1 month to make significant behavioral changes. For example, an 18-year-old would require 18 months to start to see significant behavioral changes. When I was the administrator of the Oakland Area Learning Center, we used to have what's called a transformation rubric. The staff would assess and talk about where the student was at in the transformational process. I'll give you an example. A student would first walk into our school, hat over their heads or over their eyes, down this, down, and they'd say, "Teach me." Maybe a week later, the hat's above the eyes. Maybe 2 weeks later, there's a smile on their face. You get the picture? It doesn't just happen. It's a transformation process. I was pleased, tickled pink, on the graduation that the auditors carried out 3 years. Give them a little more time. Give them hope. What's time costing us? That's a critical, we can't lose track of that graduation, how they did that over a three-year period. If they get the time, you can get them there. And if you give them hope, if you take away hope, we all lose. The next thing is the recommendation on oversight of alternative programs. I skipped number three. The MD should pilot the pilot project. We wholeheartedly support the need for pilot projects, but not with MD oversight. I say this with all due respect. We have had a great working relationship with Ms. Kibble and previous alternative specialists. But we have a concern that traditional assessment specialists will only get us traditional assessments. I believe that there can be a better process. 2 years ago, this House conducted a study group, and I think some of you were in that study group. It was some of the best testimony and series of meetings that I've ever been involved in. A bill was written back then. It was House File 2106 that did many things that we're talking about today. The MDE was written into the bill and involved in the process, but a representative advisory committee was leading the pilot project. Regretfully, this House File 2106 did not make it through the legislative process. Number four, MDE should increase its ongoing oversight of alternative education programs. As I said previously, we realize that MDE has been understaffed recently, and we would support this recommendation. Number five, MDE should review its policy for determining alternative education schools' adequate yearly progress. This one touches home. We support this 100%. And it was included in House File 2106. The programs have been unfairly scrutinized for too long. I often half jokingly say, what do Hester Prim and state approved alternative programs have in common? They both wear scarlet letters. Only ours are AYP. And many times not justified. When a student spends 11 years of failure in a system and comes to an alternative program for 1 year, and we get the label. That's not right. To 2 years ago, approximately 20 alternative programs submitted alternative assessment requests to the department. Some of these were meaningful root cause assessments that evaluated real behavioral indicators that lead to academic success. Instead of delayed indicators like standardized assessments that don't do us any good. And some of these were growth model assessments. Oh, that makes sense. We tested during the time they were with us. All of them were rejected, all 20. In closing, I would like to thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today, and thank you for bringing light on this very important topic.
Thank you very much, Mr. Allen. It's wonderful to see your passion. I hope you are around students a lot that you're teaching. Questions from the members? Okay. Thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait 1 minute. Representative Slocum.
Save the best for last. I respect your passion. I think it's wonderful. Don't you have a meeting this week? Statewide meeting? Stay in touch with us.
Mr. Allen was shaking his head for the tape. He does have a meeting, a statewide meeting. So.
Representative Slocum, Madam Chair, yes, we have our annual state conference starting tomorrow.
Very good. Thank you very much. I want to note that Representative Bly is in the audience, and he was the author of the bill that Mr. Allen was talking about and chaired that task force. And I wonder, Representative Bly, if you have any comments to make. Not to put you on the spot, because I didn't tell him about this. Well,
thank you for the opportunity. I'll try to be brief. I've had many opportunities to work with Mr. Allen on many occasions, and I too appreciate his passion. And yes, he has worked very well with students for many, many years. I am planning to bring forward a bill that that does look at the recommendations and kind of builds on the prior bill that I introduced before, and hopefully you'll give that a hearing.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions for Representative Bly? Anybody else? Thank you, Representative Bly. Anyone else in the audience who cares to testify? Hearing none, I'll just remind people one more time in case anyone came in late that bills from last year are not viable this year unless you turn in a new hearing request. And otherwise, we'll take our cue from you and they will not be discussed this year. If there aren't any other announcements or questions, Representative Garofalo, I'm looking forward to that T-shirt. And the meeting is adjourned.